Welcome to the Open House podcast site. Available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Managing life in the tough times. That's the series we've been doing around about this time for the last few weeks. We've looked at, recession-proofing your job, recession-proofing your business, managing your personal debt. And now it's time to look at this whole idea of managing your mortgage. When we keep on hearing so much about a downturn and people losing their jobs and businesses laying off staff, how can we get ourselves in a good position to ride this year through, maybe even next year? Gavin Martin is back with us. Gavin, hi.
Hi, Sheridan. How are you going?
I'm doing very well from Cornerstone Wealth. It was good to talk to you last week, and I actually got a lot out of our chat last week.
Oh, great.
When it came to the personal debt and just how to manage it. I mean, I think your idea there about, first of all, you have a $1,000 buffer. Start that up, save that up first, and then start on the small debts that you have, the credit cards, the personal debts first, the smaller one first, so you can feel like you've actually got a good win under your belt and then keep on going from there. Very, very helpful advice. So you've raised the bar high tonight, so you better give us some jolly good advice for our mortgage now.
Let's see what we can do.
So here we are, we're in this situation, and it might be that we're already feeling the pinch. I guess in the last, 6 months or so, we've actually had interest rates go down, so it's a little bit easier. But still, we keep on hearing about a downturn, about people losing their jobs. First of all, illustrate the difference that just one single mortgage payment can make in the long term to a mortgage, because it's actually quite telling, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really quite significant. I've actually neglected to have the figures right in front of me at the moment, but particularly early on in a mortgage, it can save us a significant amount of money. And sorry for not having the accurate figures, but for example, early on in the mortgage, if you're putting $50 against a mortgage payment, so an additional payment, that could save you, in the order of $250. So when we're making those decisions about whether we, go out for dinner or make that purchase or what have you, if you think it in those contexts, that you can actually save, that sort of money over the duration of your loan, it really gives us a great way to make decisions more clearly, or the right information to make those decisions more clearly. Yeah.
So you're talking about a $50 above your regular mortgage payment, are you? Or you're talking about just a $50 payment? Well, it couldn't be a $50 payment these days, could it? So a $50 extra payment on top of what you normally pay could actually work out to be $250 over the life of the mortgage.
Yeah, exactly. I might just try and clarify that with you as we go through the call. But that's the principle.
Okay. Well, give us some basic strategies then. If somebody listening is feeling anxious over the mortgage, whatever the size, because of the current financial situation, where would you start?
Yeah, if they're actually struggling to meet mortgage repayments, one of the things we talked about last week was mentioned the idea of going to an interest-only loan. Often that's not one of the most beneficial things they can do, because particularly if they're at the start of the loan, so they're taking out a 30-year loan, at the very start of a loan, a very, very small portion of the payments or regular payments are actually interest, a principal. So therefore, by going to interest only, you're making very marginal savings, and it will put a bit of a warning up to your lender or your borrower. So often going interest only, particularly for the start of the loan, isn't that beneficial. But there are a couple of other things that the last 6 months of interest rate cuts has enabled people in a difficult situation to do. A number of the banks have actually, as interest rates have fallen, they've not they've applied the lower interest rate to lenders, but they've not actually reduced their mortgage payments. So many people are actually paying a little bit more on their mortgage than they actually need to. And it's a good
way, which normally would be a good thing, wouldn't it? Normally that would actually be a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I encourage people to do that. If they can actually continue to do that, I think that's a great thing, because it will enable them to pay off their mortgage a little bit quicker. But it does, not all the lenders have done it, but it does present an opportunity for those people that are struggling, that they may actually be able to reduce those payments or take advantage of that difference, all those additional payments that they've made, so they have a little bit of a buffer there.
Okay.
It's just been an effective strategy for banks to do a bit of fundraising, as in the credit market's tight. It's a good way for them to be able to get access to some money to lend. So, okay.
So it might be that if you're tight and you're squeezed when it comes to paying the mortgage, you may already be paying a little bit more extra because of the recent cuts in rates. So you could actually reduce your things. Now, when it comes to the interest only payments, you're suggesting at the beginning of the loan, don't do it because it might send a bad message to the bank. You may not actually be any financially better off anyway. But at what point into the loan may it be an option?
Yeah,
or are you just totally against the idea altogether?
Yeah, I'm against the idea, but obviously the further you get into a mortgage, so if you've got a 30-year mortgage and you're 15 years into that, the proportion of interest payments versus principal payments increases. The principal increases the later on you go in the mortgage. So going to an interest only at that point in time may have a significant impact on the amount of your payments each month.
Okay.
But still, it's not the most desirable situation to pursue.
Okay. All right.
Mm. Now, the other one that might be beneficial in relating to that sort of concept is to reset the mortgage. So, say for example, you're 15 years into the mortgage, or even 5 years into the mortgage, you could reset the mortgage back out to a 30-year loan, and therefore you'd be able to have lower interest payments because you're paying it over a longer period. And again, all these things are not desirable, but if you're in a difficult situation...
Yes, it may mean the difference between keeping your home and losing it.
Yeah. But on that note, there's also the thing that often debt enables us to continue doing something that we need that we really shouldn't do. So some of these strategies might get us through, but if ultimately we need to make the big and hard decision, sometimes the extra flexibility enables us to just draw out the problem longer rather than making a decision about, a larger decision, whether that's selling the home or, downsizing, what have you. Yeah.
This is Open House across the nation. We're talking to Gavin Martin, getting some financial tips on managing the mortgage, particularly in a downtime right now. So just picking up on that then, when should somebody think about not kind of pulling all the levers and everything to maintain the home and do these kinds of things of keeping the mortgage, but actually thinking about downsizing, thinking about selling? Are there any telltale signs when people come into your office that you kind of think, I reckon at this point in time, you should start thinking about selling the house anyway?
It really comes down to a numbers thing and looking at the inflows and outflows. And it's pretty clear to see when people come in and they are in that position where they can't afford to do things moving forward. And that's particularly the case where you're talking with young couples, and they're thinking in the next year or so they're going to think about having a family, and they're already struggling on the current budget on two incomes, and they're really struggling to make all their payments. That's where it's a real telltale sign that once they get down to one income, they're not going to be able to afford it longer term. Yeah.
Okay. So then you're encouraging people to bail out sometimes.
Yeah. Depending on the circumstances, everyone's different. I have done that in the past. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, what about calling mum and dad for help? That happens quite a bit. Since we're talking about couples, it's often quite often the couples will actually have some sort of arrangement where they bring mum and dad in financially on their mortgage. What do you think of that?
Yeah, really interesting one, Sheridan. One thing that I don't recommend, and it gets back to biblical principles of, go and guarantor, really don't recommend going down that track. So that would be in the case that the parents go guarantor on the line, so they'll guarantee that if their child doesn't meet the repayments, then they will step in and take over. Don't recommend doing that, whether that's for family or for friends. The Bible's pretty clear on doing that.
Yeah. There's some verses in the Old Testament, isn't there, about not going guarantor and things like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but the other one, and you can go guarantor for a, I guess, a smaller portion of the home, or provide. You know, one of the things that when you're lending in Australia, it's good to have 20% deposit, because then you don't have to pay mortgage insurance, and so you can have a small amount of a parent's home, for example, that you can be used as that security for that 20% deposit. I'm sort of not a real supporter of using that approach either. Mm-hmm. It's basically a similar thing, but to a lesser degree, but can still have the same implication that the parent could actually lose their home should things all go pear-shaped as well. There are some great ways that parents can help, though, and one thing is that they can gift money. I think that's a really appropriate way to do it.
Yes.
But to actually loan money to them often causes two things. One, that the child ends up buying a home that they couldn't really afford, based on the fact that they've got some money that they don't have to pay interest on, and that they'll ultimately have to pay back.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second problem with parents loaning money to children as opposed to gifting it, is that it changes the dynamic. There's one comment that Christmas dinner tastes different when you, and I guess back to that Proverbs 22:7, the borrower is servant to the lender, so it's the child being servant to the parent, gets you into that type of relationship. So yeah, I'll warn off those examples, but there are great ways that parents can assist. They can match additional mortgage payments that children make on their loan, their loan, so that they're motivating them to do the right thing. Yes. Or if they're in a difficult situation, then gift some assistance in terms of mortgage repayments.
Yes, okay, but just give it as a gift, not as a loan, and simply it's done. There's no further. It's simply a gift. You don't actually have to wrestle with any relational difficulties later on when it hasn't been paid in time, etc.
Yeah, there's no strings attached. And I've had some people joke about the fact that my parents are going to give me some money, but they're really keen for us to have children. So it's as if they, we'll give you money to help you buy a house, and so therefore you can have children. And if you don't have the children, and can be complex.
Yeah. Now, did you see this list of towns in the various states and territories around the nation where it was actually better to buy than to rent? Did you catch that at all? I mean, some of these are pretty regional areas, but it was interesting to see.
No, I just heard you on the intro talk that through, Sharon. I thought that was really interesting. I've heard about a list of the top 10 most hated ways to save money. And I remember one of them was to not have pets, or to get rid of your pets.
Right, yeah.
because pets do cost a lot of money, but most people don't want to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And one of the other ones was to move to a lower cost area, a lower cost town.
Yes.
Because they're great in concept. It's great to move to an area that's low cost. And if that works for people, if they are able to continue to work and to have the community around them that they need, then that's fantastic. But often it just doesn't, it doesn't work. So it's great in concept, but getting down to working for your needing your support network around you, it often doesn't work.
That's the thing, isn't it? I was looking at this list and thinking, well, okay, will anybody actually move out there? But I guess it would be, would you move out there just to get a house? You'd want to have, a job. You want to have some friends. You want to have some family around you too. So it's interesting to go through. So Hackett in ACT, average price of a home there is $245,000. Boy, you don't get that very much in the capital cities anymore, do you?
No, that's great, isn't it?
Yeah, Rose Hill in New South Wales, $205,000. North Dubbo, $114,000. Mm-hmm. Northern Territory, Ludmilla near Darwin, $447,000. And the Gap near Alice Springs, $182,000. Dysart in Queensland, $400,000. Surprised at that, actually. I wouldn't have thought that was, I wouldn't have thought $400,000 would have been typical for Dysart. But anyway, it's gone up. Gillies Plains in South Australia, that's $212,000. And Yarlorn North, which is kind of regional Latrobe area, $116,000 in Victoria. And Bainton in WA, which I thought was fascinating, $832,000 for the average home, which I would think is actually pretty high up there. But the list was of places where it's still cheaper to buy a home rather than rent. So the monthly repayment for a house like that would be $4,123, but the monthly rent around that area is actually $8,000 per month. Obviously, wow. A mining town. So
supply and demand thing, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. All right.
There's also an interesting story of a man in Tasmania. I think he had eight kids and never looked like being able to purchase a home, but he actually was able to buy a home with the full first home buyer's grant. Mm-hmm. So similar to
the full,
very cheap. Yeah, it was something along the lines of three times the $7,000, so the $21,000 plus an additional whatever it is. So
yes,
you know, $30,000 or so, and he was able to buy a home.
Get a full home. Yeah. How good is that? How good is that? All right, Gavin. Thanks for your time again.
My pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
Appreciate that. Gavin Martin, financial advisor from Cornerstone Wealth. His website, mastermymoney.com.au. A couple of other contacts you might want to keep in mind too. If you are struggling with repaying the mortgage, there's a number of organizations out there that are doing credit counseling and that are kind of giving those kinds of principles and how to, you know, get through the tough times. Certainly make contact with Gavin. The other groups around are Christians Against Poverty, CAP, as they're called, budget counselling there. CAPOST.org is their website, CAPOST for CAP Australia. Wesley Missions Credit Line Program, wesleymission.org.au. Salvo's Money Care Program, salvos.org.au. A lot of these guys are just simply dog.org.au. And Vinnie's also have a budget counselling service too, vinnie's.org.au.
We hope you enjoy this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.